everybody, welcome to the Film Pigs podcast. This is a very special bacon episode.
And by very special, you mean like haphazard and last minute.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to lay it all out like that, sure.
Let's live in honesty.
I just assume at this point the audience knows that if we're talking about a bacon episode,
it's kind of known that okay, something happened and we're just winging it.
It's off the cuff, unplanned. It's
unplugged.
There's no preparation involved at all. So I think that's okay. I mean, that's what a normal podcast is.
Yeah. Some people like do this nonsense and charge for it.
There are millionaires who, Joe Rogan, you think he plans that shit? He doesn't plan it.
No, he's very well informed, Todd.
Yeah.
He likes to inform himself on both sides of the argument.
Yeah. That's what we like about him. And he points you to the best supplements as well.
Only the finest.
So since it's a bacon and we don't have a plan, I'm going to start this show. What we're going to do tonight is we're going to talk about what we've seen lately. And then I'm going to throw out some news bits, some movie news bits, and see what see what Skelton might have to say about them. Let's start with you, Skelton. We'll go round robin on the movies. I can't remember which movies I might have said last time. I think I've seen a lot of movies since the last time we recorded this. But
yeah, we don't have. Yeah, we're not keeping up on our podcast continuity.
No.
So I might repeat ourselves.
If there are repeat titles, they're repeat titles, don't be polite. Just say.
Why would I know?
Well, I'm just saying if you happen to recognize one, then just tell me. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'll jump in. I'll jump right in.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So what's your first title that you've seen lately, Skelton? What have you seen?
The first title that I have seen lately is a delightful, charming little movie called Sisu.
Ah, that's a film about a bunch of Nazis. And
yeah, it's about a Norwegian guy who's sick of the war because it killed his whole family,
right.
And he just wants to go out into the countryside and dig for gold, and he finds a lot of gold, but then these Nazis show up and he has to get his gold away from them, but they want his gold. What they don't realize is that he was a crazy person in the war, and he's like a legendary soldier. And then he just starts stabbing them through the heads with giant knives.
Right. Don't they say did he fight with the Russians or against the Russians?
No, he fought the Russians.
So he was on their side.
No, this was a prior. This is the Russians were also mean to people.
Right. But in the end, the Russians fought the Nazis. That's why I was confused.
Right. No. In the end, yeah, we were allied with the Russians because the Nazis were way, way, way worse.
But before that, the Russians were assholes, and this guy fought the Russians, and now he's fighting the Nazis. The point is so many Nazis literally explode, and that's what I love about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's also like hits one of my favorite movie requirements or preferred requirements, which is it clocks in right around 90 minutes. Mm-hmm. It's super tight. I mean, my biggest complaint is not enough Nazis got stabbed through the head with a giant knife. And I could have seen, I would have been happy to see a few more landmines flung at Nazi heads. But you know, that's maybe, you know, maybe, you know, you want to leave your audience.
That's really they'll do. Keep that. The sequel will just be 90 minutes of Nazis exploding. and that will be great.
But yeah, no, it's a really, I really enjoyed the movie. It was really very stylish. It really felt like, oh, if Quentin Tarantino was capable of making a 90-minute movie, it might be something like this. Like if he could just bear to cut anything.
Yeah.
It's cause it's got that kind of very pulpy, influence and, very stylish. It's got like a real 70s throwback kind of, little exploitation, a little, grindhousey. But it's really shot really well. It looks beautiful. It's a very economical script. Mm-hmm. Like, there's not much talking at all. It's really just conveyed through the action and image, which is very impressive, especially, like, when it's a... I mean, this is, you know... It's not gonna find itself on the nomination lists of, you know, art films, even though it is kind of an art film.
Yeah.
But because it's very, like, very grindhousey, violent-y, it's going to be relegated to that kind of category.
Yeah, well, certainly here in the United States, where we put Nazism first,
exactly. It's not going to win a lot of awards. Offensive here because, yeah, it's you know, how dare you be offensive to mm-hmm. Nazis?
Yeah.
Yeah, but really good performances. You know, I thought the lead, I can't remember the actor's name, but as the grizzled protagonist, just trying to get his gold.
We remembered his name on the last episode of this podcast, so people can just go back and listen to that.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah, good. So we remember there, but yeah, he was really good. You know, the lead Nazi bad guy is really excellent villain, mm-hmm. And just really kind of chewing up the scenery, and then of course the Nazis have their women prisoners, drive home that kind of grindhouse exploitation,
you get the total satisfaction
kind of,
with that
sheen.
But it's like it's not super exploitative with that element of the woman, but yes, it has that flavor.
Yeah, no, it's not like an exploitation movie, but it's got that like suggestion.
Yeah, it's definitely that's a very good observation. Yeah. It's definitely suggesting the grindhouse movie of the past, but
I think it was like a good choice because it was the story they were telling was a very simple, like, just you should have left him alone story, like a very John Wick, Wickian, kind of setup. And you didn't need to go down the road of, you know, let's do the exploitative, like extra rapey stuff that you get in the kind of the 70s exploitation movies. But we're going to have that component in there because we really like if you were somehow you're on the fence of like these Nazis who were very specifically SS Nazis, like, so the Naziest of the Nazis, like if you were on the fence, like they put this extra bit in and it's like, oh right, they've also kidnapped women, are you still on the fence with these guys, really?
Yeah. Because
if you are, you're probably a Nazi.
And that's what the old exploitation movies did as well with Nazis, but then they had fun with it, and that was the problem. This movie doesn't mm-hmm. do it. It's sort of this, mm-hmm. there's a new wave of grindhouse movies. Like, I'm thinking about that rape revenge movie called Revenge, you know, even arguably Promising Young Woman. It's like there are elements of the exploitation film in it, and those elements are the ones that like ultimately excited us into seeing these exploitation movies, but they don't bring the like cheap pornographic element of those old movies into it. They don't need to. They're just give you the satisfying elements without you know, satisfying the perverts at the same time, I guess is what I'm saying, which I like. I think it's a very,
yeah, you can't, you don't want to satisfy the perverts.
And I like that, that there are indie filmmakers doing this kind of stuff, because they're the movies that I like. It's like, so often I have to go back and watch these gross movies because that's the only one. But now I have, you know, I don't have to go back and, watch Ilsa, Queen of the SS anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You've got something where it's like, hey, it's grindhousey, but it actually also doesn't glorify Nazism. Yeah. It stabs it repeatedly. It And that's my kind of picture.
I agree. It's like it's something I think I've been waiting for my whole life. I know that sounds crazy. I'll go with my first title is I watched A Man Called Otto. Starring Tom Hanks.
I watched the first 20 minutes.
Why'd you shut it off?
Because I was a man called.
All right. So,
it just wasn't. It wasn't grabbing me.
I get you. I watched the whole thing. I mean, I did. You know, walk into watching it. Or sit into my couch to watch it in a deep and utter depression. So like
so this was a picnic.
Yeah.
For
so
you.
Watching a guy commit suicide, it was like, I don't know why I didn't sit down and listen to Leonard Cohen albums, but because it was a movie in a tone, it had a mood that I was in. And the acting I thought was actually very good. So it worked for me. And you could see it's a very predictable, you know, heartstring tugger. You know where it's going. Well directed and well written, I think, and well acted enough to get you to those places if you're in the right place to watch a movie called A Man Called Otto. You know?
Yeah, I think I was probably still in Nazi stabbing mood. When I put that on, so I'll probably go back to it. Yeah, because I didn't turn it off because I didn't think it was bad, or because I thought it was bad. I just turned it off.
Yeah, I totally get that.
Yeah, you know, I'm not connecting with.
If
it.
If I was in another place, I wouldn't have connected with it either. But I will say, like, if you do feel like maybe you're in the mood for it, try it again. And Tom Hanks really is. It's impossible to deny his movie stardom, his presence. And
I actually just recently in the last like month or so rewatched the boat show,
the Greyhound.
Modern hostage boat
show. Captain Phillips.
Captain Phillips is correct. Ding, ding, ding.
Won the game. I won this game.
You won the game. You won the game. But no, I just did rewatch Captain Phillips, and it's, yeah, his performance in that, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah, especially the last.
And I liked it. I like that movie. That movie I actually quite like a lot.
Paul Greengrass does well for me when he's doing real life stories. If it's not real life stories.
When it's not Jason Bourne. Where the camera is shaking so much, you're just wishing Doug Liman.
Yeah,
would come
picture,
back
but the camera shakes the camera. A lot in United 93, and it arguably shakes a lot in Captain Phillips. Like watching the.
Yeah, it's more grounded because it's their real. Yeah, it's no, you're right. It is. It's his style works so much better with a real world story.
Yeah.
Than fiction, or maybe it's his style is just too much for action. That could be it too.
Well, I just feel like, you know, with Bloody Sunday was him too, right? Bloody Sunday.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, he does these real life events that are on their face violent, and something about that style of shaking and all that stuff, I think, works. For like real life stories, whereas when you're dealing with fiction, like so often in his Bourne movies, I just was like, I want to see Matt Damon kick someone in the face. Stop moving the camera. That's why I'm here.
Well, that's why the first one, the Doug Liman directed one. That's why I liked it so much, was because, not because I'm a Matt Damon fan, because I'm not, but because it was clear Matt Damon was doing a lot of the fighting and he put in the work to be convincing physically, and they choreographed some really interesting fight scenes. And they were shot in a way where you could follow what was happening, and it was very exciting. And but Greengrass it seemed like for the sequels they continued to do interesting fight scenes, but I couldn't follow them because the camera wouldn't hold still, so I could never tell.
Right, you don't know what's happening. Yeah,
but it looked like that. I was like, this looks like it's a fun fight scene. I wish I could.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It was a bummer. What's your next title? What else have you seen?
The next movie I went and saw Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
My son saw that, and he is a big Guardians of the Galaxy fan, and he said, "Look, sure I'll like it when I watch it next time, but I was ultimately disappointed by it."
Yeah, I mean, it's a surprisingly dark movie. Mm-hmm. And it's also it's also like a very delayed movie. Mm-hmm. So, cause it went through that whole period where Marvel fired Gunn because of his old dumb tweets.
Why didn't he take those down? He got in trouble for those fucking things twice. Why didn't he take them down after the first time?
Right. Well, here's the thing. It's like, it was like around like, I think maybe like 2012 or so is when he first got called out for him, and he publicly apologized.
Right. But he didn't take,
He probably should have deleted it. He probably should have deleted them. Just because like, then you won't be able
to. Did he not delete them because he didn't want to look like he was covering up evidence or something?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things that it's like when you get called out and then you stand up and apologize and go, yeah, these are stupid and this is where it came from. And that's where I was as a human being then. And I understand how it's just not funny. Right. And I apologize. And then moving on, you do that publicly. You think, oh, I don't think, 10 years later, right-wing fascists are going to come out of the woodwork and dig these things up again. And then Disney's going to cave to that bullshit and fire me from a job. But then I go get a better job at DC and make even more money for them. And then Disney goes, yeah, okay, we really fucked that up. You can come back and do the third one.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
which I'm sure he charged them a lot more.
I still don't, I've been called out. I've been called stupid.
I don't know if it's like, I don't know if he's deleted them now or not, even. At this point now, it's probably out of spite. He's probably not going to delete them. Like, fine, dig them up again.
If I get a pop culture fact wrong and someone calls me out on it, I'm like, oh shit, I'm sorry about that. I fucked up. And then I delete everything. What?
Yeah. That's what you need to do now, because people are just going to dig for dirt on you.
They'll find it anyway. They're going to find it anyway, but it's just why make it easy?
But again, it's like you could never have predicted that would happen.
No, I guess not. I'm just saying. I would have.
In 2012 time. Now, today, with hindsight, we would go, that was stupid. Why did he even do that? But think about the mindset and how social media worked in 2012. It was not something you would have conceived.
Maybe not. I'm just saying, every time.
Not at all.
Since the beginning of social media, when people have called me out on mistakes, I've just deleted the posts. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. All I'm saying. It's just something I do automatically, but I guess not everybody.
Well, you can also set up services, which I think he actually, I'm trying to remember, he may have done this now. Like, you can do like a service that basically just like after X amount of time, it just deletes tweets older than.
Oh, right. And it just, date. For whatever reason.
So they just, it just roll deletes everything.
And those ones got missed by the roll. They got missed.
No. He did that. I think that's what he's done now since.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that's smart. I guess.
Right. But then it was just like, oh, right. Yeah. These were stupid, insulting, hurtful tweets. And I was a jerk for saying it. And I apologize. And And that was that. And then he moved on and, you know, started making Marvel movies and shit. And so you're like, oh, okay, you know, crisis mm-hmm. handled. And then they just dig up the exact same shit. And then, like, the spineless nitwits at Disney caved immediately. And then actually helped his career. Like, the spinelessness of Disney actually really helped Gunn's career.
Yeah, and good,
like,
for Gunn. I mean,
because you know when he came back for three, you know when he came back for volume three, he was like, yeah, okay, but my fee's doubled now if you want me to do
this. And you're
going
to have to do a holiday special as well.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that is, and nobody gets to say shit to me. I get to just make this movie and turn and walk yep. away. And then I get to go make Superman movies. And
yeah, well, good for him, I guess. I mean, that's great. Yeah. I'm a huge Gunn fan from way back.
Anyway, the movie, like, Guardians, I mean, I liked it okay. But I think it was, like, there's a little bit of fatigue in the sense that, you know, it was very, very delayed. And then he also had to kind of rewrite the script to deal with the changes that, like, the Avengers Endgame stuff made to the character statuses mm-hmm. that he, from what I read with, like, some interviews, were not things he was planning on doing for the third mm-hmm. movie. So he had to kind of, I think he had to rewrite and kind of reconceive to fit.
Colby said it.
The new status of the characters.
Yeah, Colby was saying that it felt like a lot of different elements jammed together into a pastiche that didn't necessarily make a ton of sense.
Yeah, I mean, but that's kind of Marvel movies now.
Yeah, for sure.
It was still a more cohesive, more emotionally engaging Marvel film than any of them in this latest phase for me, at any rate, because, you know, Gunn's really good at that, you know, punching you in the gut, whether you like it or not. He's really excellent mm-hmm. at, you know, at the big feels.
He is, like, and at the same time, he has such an irreverent sense of humor that those two elements, like, often for me, gel together well in his movies.
Yeah,
it's like,
I mean, what I will say is, I think
it's trauma movies meets, I think, like, the Merchant Ivory. It's trauma and Merchant Ivory jammed together somehow. I appreciate that.
I do think, and shit, I'm blanking on the actor's name, but who's the main villain? I think I agree with the assessment, the general assessment, that his character is called the High Evolutionary. And he's just this enormous douchebag who makes genetic experiments on people. And, you know, he's been rightly praised as being kind of like the best Marvel villain in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And he really is. His performance is really good and villainy and engaging and magnetic. And so he kind of... I think his performance kind of is the glue, kind of the magnet that keeps the movie from
who is it? I'm looking it up because I haven't seen the movie.
Yeah, look it up because I can't remember. I'm totally blanking on his name. But a very, very good performance.
All right. Let me tell you my other Guardians of Galaxy 3. The High Evolutionary is played by, I'm not going to say this right, Shukwudi Iwuji. Is that?
I think that's exactly.
Is that how you say it?
I don't
well,
I'm
that's
sure.
What his name, I mean, I'm saying it phonetically.
You're right. That is the actor.
Yeah, yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, cool. What else is that guy in? I don't know if I know him.
He was, no, you've seen him in a couple things. I think he was in one of the John Wicks. I don't think it was a
huge
part,
but
I know he was in one of the John Wicks.
Show, I watched that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think he was on Designated Survivor 1 or 2 episodes.
Yes, he was. John Wick Chapter 2.
Which? Oh, Chapter 2. Okay,
okay,
yeah.
Yeah. It was on Madam Secretary. Yeah, he's been a lot. I mean, this is like our, like, his IMDb profile. Fewer credits than I have, by the way. But it's like, I'm just kidding. It's just like classic working your way up. I mean, this is a guy who had a bunch of guest stars for years. and then, you know, got in a John Wick movie, and then, yeah, good for him.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Talk about.
No, but he's very good. He's very good. I really enjoyed him. He was my favorite part.
Yeah. I'm not that good. I'll talk about, I have so many movies. Did I mention A House Party last time? I saw the new House Party movie.
You may have. All right.
Then I'm not even going to talk about it.
That sounds vaguely
It was very
familiar.
Good. Another one I saw is okay. Like J-Lo's doing all the streamers. She's doing all her movies on streamers.
Oh, the mother? I saw the mother.
What did you think of that?
I enjoyed it. Too long.
Yeah, yeah. And the like when it stalls out to do the mother-daughter relationship shit, it's like, what are we doing, guys? It's
like, yeah, I mean, there's halfway into it. There's like, it feels like I was like, oh shit, the movie's over. And I was like, this has been a real kind of a fun, tight little rescue movie. And then it was like, blam, another kidnapping. I'm like, ah, here we go. It's going to be another hour. I thought this was going to be like under 80 minutes, but it's going to be 2 hours.
Yeah.
But that being said, I still kind of enjoyed it because I thought she did a good job. Kind of, it's, you know, I mean, basically it's doing, you know, the woman point of view of what would normally be kind of a Liam Neeson type.
Yeah,
of
I mean, I go back to, I mean, this movie I could not help but comparing to Enough. And Enough is a better movie than this. And the reason is Enough doesn't have as much of the J-Lo being dramatic and doing relationship stuff and, dare I say, actory things in long dramatic scenes. This movie had too much of it. That was.
Yeah, but I think that's just. But that's a. I mean, that's a case. That's a director. That's a director editor problem. You know, that's just a pacing.
Well, it's also.
Thing,
I mean,
There was too much of that. Like, you knew it was very well established, kind of her state of ennui and torturedness.
Yeah.
And
I would argue
there were too many of these asides of tortured mother at a distance.
But also, I mean, they wrote these things for her to do. And I don't know if that's the best
right, but this is the kind of thing that. But this is the kind of thing that in the editing room, that's when you get through, like, and you're like, oh, we've crossed 2 hours.
Yeah.
You look at it and go, yeah, you know what? Here's thematically, we are hitting this in the head way too many times.
Commando,
tighten it up.
Commando did not need a whole like 20-minute scene sequence of Arnold Schwarzenegger. And who's the boss girl talking?
Alyssa Milano,
the great.
No, but what it desperately did need, and what it absolutely delivered on, was an opening credits father daughter montage.
That's true, and then you're done with it. That's what I'm saying. And he carried a log. He
and fully established their relationship.
He carries a full.
Yeah, well, he's carrying a log, and he carries a giant log, which establishes how strong he is.
And then he loves his daughter. And then Commando stuff.
Yeah, and they feed deer.
Right. This is what I'm saying.
And tease each other with ice cream. It's a wholesome family relationship.
I'm not saying J-Lo can't do the acting stuff. She does it in her rom-coms. Let her get it out there. But with her action movies, write them more like Commando. Just have the bullshit in the opening credits, and then it's J-Lo blowing shit up and punching people in the face.
I would watch a remake of Commando starring.
Yeah,
J-Lo.
I would too. What are you kidding? I was ready to watch.
Yeah, and you do a father son or a mother son montage. You do a shot for shot remake of that montage.
Where she's carrying a tree.
Yeah.
That would be awesome because it was also ridiculous when Arnold Schwarzenegger was doing it.
Yeah, because you know that hurt his back, even as strong as he was at the time. That's still like that. You're gonna feel that like
it wasn't. I bet you it was hollow. That was bullshit. It was a hollow log.
Oh god,
hollow log. Dungeons and Dragons. Did you see that?
I did see the Dungeons and Dragons. I quite enjoyed that. Again, a little too long, but an absolutely fun, light, breezy goof around.
Yeah, it was. I enjoyed it. I think I credit the cast, you know, as an ensemble for all knowing, seeming to know what the movie they're in yeah. is, what the tone is, and just yeah. having a blast with it. And, it, you know, it's a messy movie and the narrative is messy, but everybody's having fun the whole time. It's got yeah, the episodic feel of an Indiana Jones movie from the 80s. You know, it's a bit episodic, but who cares? Everybody's having
fun. Yeah. And, but for me, like, the messiness worked really well because it actually kind of was a little reminiscent of like an actual Dungeons and Dragons game.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
That you played like in high school where it is messy and you're goofing around and spilling soda and, you know, and laughing and having a blast. So that element of it, I thought actually really worked well. And, you know, and yeah. And the cast, you know, everybody knew the assignment, like they knew, you know, how to play. And like, you know, Chris Pine and Michelle Rodriguez, I thought were a pretty entertaining comedy duo.
Yeah, they were. They were good. I like them both. I always enjoy Chris.
Especially when they went back to like her like house and like her like ex-husband or ex-boyfriend. She's like this giant barbarian and he's this tiny little dwarf guy. Yeah. And they just have that like heart to heart.
It's hilarious. It's really funny. Do you have other titles that you've seen? Or should
I saw the Super Mario Brothers
why?
With the much worse Chris.
Yeah. The worst.
Better Chris is in Dungeons and Dragons.
Pratt's the worst of all the Chris's, right?
He is absolutely the worst of Chris's. The Super Mario is actually pretty fun. Oh, yeah? I didn't like it as much as I liked the Puss in Boots sequel, which I thought was really solid. A surprisingly solid, especially for being like a sequel, like a random sequel after X amount of time. So I like that better, but, the Mario was still a lot of fun, mostly because they did a really good job kind of like hitting all of the different Mario games, mm-hmm. Mario centric games throughout the years and weaving them into the kind of the whole journey through the weird world. And and Jack Black as the big bad is like, he again, you know, like Guardian's performance, it's like he's the glue that kind of holds that whole thing together with his
Jack Black is really good at the voice acting thing. I mean, I would say the Kung Fu Panda franchise in its entirety is very fun and very good.
It's very entertaining.
Oh, that's cool. Did I say
it was Leguizamo and Hoskins?
You know what? I just rewatched that movie and I will say this. I do not hate it. I enjoy it.
You know what, that the good double feature, Super Mario Brothers,
the original
with, you know, the Hoskins, Leguizamo and Dennis Hopper double feature, that with the Dolph Lundgren Masters of the Universe.
Oh, yeah, that's perfect. That's perfect. You have to start
with Frank Langella as Skeletor.
You start with Super Mario Brothers and you finish.
And then you top it off with Masters.
You know they're doing a sequel.
80s cartoon and video game, the first attempt at turning those things into major IPs.
They're doing a new Masters of the Universe movie. Did you hear about that?
Oh, I don't doubt it. Well, I know they've been doing like, I know they've done like a couple of like cartoons.
No, this is, they're doing a live action
with the IP, but they're doing another live action. I'm sure. And I'm sure it's like, they're like, who's going to be He-Man?
Yeah. I don't know.
Is it John Cena? Is it The
Somebody's got to be signed on to it, but they're not talking about it. The thing I read was they're bringing Meg Foster back. And that's all I need to know. That's all I need to know.
Holy hell. Yeah. All right.
Have
I'm
you
in.
Seen Meg Foster lately?
No.
She looks different. She looks great. I love her, but you know, it's a different look than what she used to. Did I mention Renfield last time?
You may have. You may have mentioned it last time or when the last time we were just
talking. Yeah, I can't remember.
But I can't remember.
Renfield's okay. I you know, it's definitely a wait for a video movie, but you see a lot of fun.
But it's like it's kind of like Cage as Dracula. You're like,
yeah, the Cage as Dracula is great, and the lead guy, what's his face, is fun. I mean, everybody's
Nicholas.
Everybody's bringing Holt? Their A game to this. It's just the narrative of it is a muddle, but it's
just not
short enough that it doesn't.
Ooh, what's the runtime?
Like 1 hour 39 minutes, I think.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, because I haven't seen that yet.
And a lot of that runtime is credits because there's a lot of special effects. So, it just sort of they like jam in this like action-y element into it with this like mobster subplot. And you're like, why? All I need is like
Cage being Dracula
and that dude who plays Renfield being Redfield in therapy. That's all I needed.
Yeah.
I didn't need all this other nonsense, but you know, it's fine. It's not, you know, it's a movie. It's not a TV show. Did I mention Evil Dead Rise last time?
I think so. Yeah.
And I mentioned the Pope.
But you said you liked that. You said you liked
it. Oh yeah. I loved it. I thought it was great. And because of it, you know, the franchise kind of remains perfect. I like all four of the movies. And I mentioned,
I saw the Covenant.
I was going to bring up the Covenant. Yeah, How was that for you?
I liked it.
Yeah, I thought it was good.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was. It was like even though it's still kind of like a little actiony kind of thing. You're kind of used to Guy Ritchie like serving up gangster movies most of the time. So when he takes a left turn and does like a weird King Arthur movie or like war in Afghanistan.
Yeah. It's like, why are we doing this
movie? You're kind of
like, all right, guy. Yeah. Okay, right, guy. Yeah.
But I'll go with it. No, but I actually thought I quite enjoyed it. I thought it was like it's the story is something that, you don't get the focus on very much, the plight of the translators and the people, who helped the military in Afghanistan because they were promised, hey, we'll get you visas and you can come to the U.S. and then we're like, we'll get back to you on that. We gotta go.
Hang on a second. Right. Just wait. Silence for years.
Yeah,
it's bad. I liked it too. I thought it was certainly a step up from Operation Fortune.
But I kind of liked
Operation Fortune. I did too, but like Operation Fortune was like a rudderless spy movie. It didn't resonate.
I mean, it never, like, the big difference, like, tonally, it never really figured out what it was.
Yeah, and I feel like
it couldn't figure out whether it's like, hey, we're going to do kind of a straight take on the more goofy James Bondy type of movie, or we're doing a parody of it.
Yeah, and it wasn't.
And we're not quite sure.
Yeah. And I think
I still kind of enjoyed it, and it was interesting.
Right,
but Covenant definitely, like, tonally, it's a lot, very consistent.
The Guy Ritchie Jason Statham pairing post Snatch, there was Lock, Stock, and there was Snatch. I like both those movies. After that, like the straight to video stuff, and Wrath of Man. And Operation Fortune.
Yeah, Wrath of Man.
They're all just sort of
the problem with Operation Fortune with Statham being in it was that also was kind of what muddied the tonal waters, because when it tried to be a little goofy, then you were just thought of spy.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
They should have
leaned into it.
Statham being deliberately like goofy and over the top, and you're just like tonally, it's like it's going to feels like it's veering in that direction too.
Well,
much.
But it's like if it had veered entirely in that direction, I might have liked it more.
Either veered hard into it or stayed away from it, like it didn't.
And I feel this is true.
It was still fun popcorn movie.
Yeah, and there's elements of Wrath of Man and I don't know what it was called, Redemption, and all the other Jason Statham Guy Ritchie movies. There's elements to enjoy, but none of them seem committed to anything. Yeah. And that's the problem with them. Yeah. Like Wrath of Man would have been way more interesting if it was committed to being a revenge film versus a gangster film versus a drama versus whatever it was. Like it's just these movies don't make choices. And I don't know if they're writing them like on the day according to the budget. Sometimes they feel like that. It's like, oh, we wanted to do this, but the money says, no, we have to do this other thing. So we're pivoting now. And then they pivot back and it's, I don't know. It's just, but the Covenant.
Covenant is a lot more, it's tonally
consistent. Throughout. It's got really good action in it. And, you know, I liked it a lot. And I honestly, it's like movies like this that I go, yeah, this is what I want Guy Ritchie to do. Just do this. And I'd love him to do this with Jason Statham. Just like do an action, do a Statham action movie. Just do it. I'm 100% behind it. Hey, let's do, wow, we're already 40 minutes into this thing. Let's do some movie news. Yeah, it's the bacon. We do.
Yeah, because there's nothing but good movie news happening.
Yeah, yeah. Well, do you want me to just, I mean, we can talk about the strike if you want.
Well, that's just part of it. I mean, that's one depressing thing.
That is
thing.
The movie news. Yeah, it is kind of the movie news right now. What did we learn from the last strike? The quality of stuff will be very low for a while afterwards. A lot of careers. I think this is an important thing to note. A lot of careers, writers and otherwise, that might have had some momentum going into the strike will be killed.
Or resetting to zero.
To zero at best. Yeah. And it's hard to reset to zero when people already know who you are. There's going to be a lot of fallout. I mean, I think for audiences, the obvious one is there's going to be a lot of reality television in the fall, not a lot of good scripted TV. And like movies, you won't even see it for a year.
I think, like I also said, like maybe last time, that I think there's a high potential for this strike to last much longer than the last one.
Yeah.
Because you know, it's already like, the work stoppages have already cost studios in excess of all of the money that the writers were asking for.
Right. So why are they fucking doing
it? Just in like the first week of a strike. So it's because of greed. It's because the studios and the multimillionaire and billionaires that run the studios want to reduce not just writing, but all creative jobs involved in the entertainment industry. I want to reduce them to gig workers so they don't have to pay them as much. And so they don't have to pay into like health insurance and any of that other shit. So they can line their own pockets.
Folks, listen for a sec. If you've never seen Three Amigos, you have to watch Three Amigos and then you'll understand how this fucking works.
Yeah. Three Amigos. That's exactly. Yeah. But it's the same. It's the same old story. It's just, it's, you know, so, and the only thing that changes it is collective action. I mean, that's.
Yeah. Absolutely. I already voted yes on the SAG strike.
On the SAG strike. Yeah.
Yeah.
I bet Fran Drescher's getting really worried.
I hope she is. She backtracked her whole thing and was like, yeah, all you actors need to stand your ground. It was very weird how she worded it, though. It's like, what do you mean you actors?
Yeah.
All of you people problems, but she's like, do what I do, need to get together. And do
yeah. She's, but yeah, but she's an actor who got rich and famous and doesn't really have to work anymore. And it feels like, hey, this is, seems to be what, like, you either get in SAG, you either get, like, you know, union officers that are, like, really walking the walk, like an Ed Asner, like who are successful and don't actually have to work necessarily and do this thing and do it because they want to help their union. And then you get other people who are like, it feels like, you know how like in like most like cities, it's like your city councils and your, especially like your school boards are often made up at least half of like semi-retired people who have nothing better to do.
Yeah.
And so they run for office and then lord it over their office. And it's not because they want to, you know, make something better for everyone. It's because, you know, they want something to do.
Well, and they want to keep making money because they do get paid. Maybe it's not as much as they did when they were movie stars.
But it's not the money is not even really like, you know, in the case of like city councils and stuff, it's that's a pittance most of the time. True. So it's retirees that can afford to you know, spend the time on it. And then they get to be, you know, front and center. So that seems to be, you know, the two extremes you get. Right?
Yeah, I don't. I mean, as a voting member of this SAG-AFTRA,
in good standing,
I've paid my dues. A lot of people don't. You know, they put it off. They say, "Give me a second," because they're not making any money.
Hold on.
I'm not either, but I put it on a credit card. So so I could say, hey, I'm a union member in good standing, and therefore I can say Fran Drescher is an idiot if I want to. I'm up to date. I can do that.
You have paid for that privilege.
One of the things that bums me out about the SAG-AFTRA membership is every time elections come up, the people who get voted in are these people. They're recognizable.
Yeah.
And for some reason, the union has divided itself into two major parties. And there's plenty of people who aren't affiliated with these union parties. I don't think unions should have parties. I don't think unions should be run like the federal fucking government. I think it doesn't really work great on the federal level anyway, but a union shouldn't be divided by two parties. So last election for president, we had Matthew Modine and Fran Drescher. Those were the big names. But there were tons of other people, other people running who were more interesting and were working class actors. And those are the people who I always vote for, because in the union, I mean, throwing away your vote, it's like it wouldn't be better with Matthew Modine. You know, I mean, at least maybe he's not an anti-vaxxer, but he's also kind of a questionable dude. Like politically speaking, So I don't know. I wish our membership would.
You mean he's not private? Maybe he is private Joker, and it's the duality.
Yeah, maybe he is private Joker. No, because I don't know that he has the peace side. I mean, judging by the way he ran his campaign for president of the game.
Right.
You know, there was a lot of mudslinging on both sides of those parties. And I'm going, well, we could sling mud. We could go choose who has the least amount of mud, or pick a working class actor who might actually know what everybody else's problems really are. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then also, you know, not an anti-vaxxer, because I just have a problem with that. I just don't like it.
That is a problem, especially when there's a pandemic.
Yeah, it is. And at all, you know, because if you don't want to spread disease, whatever it is, if everybody's vaccinated, you're less likely to. And
I went to urgent care over the weekend because I fell off my bike and hurt my finger. And like nobody there was wearing masks.
Oh, yeah.
I was like the only one wearing masks, including the staff.
No one wears masks anymore. It's not cool.
Yeah, it was just so I don't even bother at like, I didn't even, like, because what's the point in getting into a thing if you don't have a mask on? You're going to be in an enclosed space with people for an extended period.
If I'm not eating or drinking, and I try to avoid crowded restaurants and bars anyway at this point, but if I'm not eating or drinking and I'm going into a place where there's a lot of people, like a grocery store or CVS or fucking whatever, I wear a mask.
Yeah, no, I put a mask on for that. Yeah, it's like, and if I go out, I go out to like a bar occasionally, but it's always like out on stay out on the patio, right. Outdoors.
It's not even about ventilation. It's not about COVID.
Even though it's still transmissible.
Yeah, it's not about COVID or politics for me. It's just, you know, Hill took her mask off in class for a week. She gave it a shot and got sick, like instantly. So it's not just COVID that. And now, because everybody's not wearing masks, there's all this fucking shit floating around. And a lot of it doesn't even have names, you know, whatever my wife had.
Wasn't
the flu. It wasn't COVID. It wasn't RSV. It wasn't anything except she was terribly sick. Yeah. So wear a mask and you don't get that shit.
And it's like, and everybody forgets where it's like, you remember like when like it, COVID kicked into high gear and it was like, you got to put a mask on. And you got, if you're going in out to the grocery, you masks are mandatory in businesses. Like you had to, everybody had to. Like, does everybody forget like how like the flu cases plummeted that season? Like there was no, like very little flu, very little transmission of everything else where it's just like, you know what? Even if there isn't a pandemic, this isn't a bad idea.
No.
Like,
it's why everybody in Japan wears a mask during flu season.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When you're traveling through airports and stuff in Asia. They've been doing it
for decades, long before COVID.
Yeah.
It's just because it makes sense. Next news item is the sad one, but I, you know, wanted to just say RIP to Ray Stevenson.
Yeah. Yeah. That is a left field.
It's not cool. I mean, I'm 51 and I
know it's like striking distance.
It just feels unnecessarily cruel. And like, he was always good. I honestly, you know, I'm not a big,
always good.
Great. Yeah. And I'm not a big TV guy. So I, you know, wasn't aware of Rome. I mean, he was in a lot of stuff before then.
Oh, that's right. That's where I first, like, I mean, I probably had seen him in something before Rome, but Rome was like the first time where I was like really took notice of him, you know, as an actor. Was like who the hell is this?
For me, it was Punisher Warzone, where I was like, who is this guy? Oh, he's awesome. I loved him and loved that movie. We saw it together, didn't we? In the theater. And it was just such a delight. And but I was like, and when it started, I was I probably said out loud to you, who the fuck is this guy? You know?
Yeah.
And then it was awesome.
And then he just proceeds to like light a road flare and gun down an entire room of people at a dinner
he's
party.
He's the Punisher. That's who he is.
he's punishing
people. Yeah. I just it just bums me out. It just bums me out. It's very Bill Paxton to me. It's how regularly from now on.
Yeah. Well, like, cause, and I think he, I don't know if they finished all the shooting or not, but he's in the Star Wars, the Rosario Dawson Star Wars show that's, think is coming out in the fall.
Right. Well, that's good. I mean, we get, you know, Ray Liotta is another one I'm thinking of all of a sudden.
Yeah.
We're getting a lot of like, you know, after, you know, posthumous Ray Liotta movies, including this one.
Like Cocaine
Bear. Yeah, you got Cocaine Bear, and then there's this Charlie Day movie that's getting terrible notices. Speaking of which, I wanted to, I thought we'd wrap up by talking about the Cannes Film Festival, or is it Cannes? How do you say it? It's Cannes.
I don't know.
Cannes.
I think it's just Cannes. I don't think you pronounce
it's not
the
Con.
I'm not French.
It's Cannes. Whatever it is, there were two elements of it that I thought would be interesting to talk about. One is, you know, like versus the Scorsese movie. What's that called?
I just saw the trailer for it. And I really
Four
like the trailer.
Feathers of, somewhere. I don't know. Whatever it is.
Yeah. No good.
Whatever it is.
Where
it's like 5 hours.
We're your source for the latest and greatest movie news, people. Tune in to Film Pigs, where we will mangle the title of the new Scorsese film and not even come close to getting it right.
Killers of the Flower Moon. That's what it's called.
See, you were close. Because you said Four Feathers. You said it was Martin Scorsese's Four Feathers.
No, I said Four Feathers of the Huns. And...
Four Feathers of the Huns? What?
You know.
What kind of movie do you think?
I didn't say Huns. I said Huns. And it was just a nonsense word because I couldn't remember the rest of the title.
Oh, I thought you said Huns.
No, I didn't think it was about the Huns. Although I'd pay good money to watch.
Although I would watch a Scorsese movie about the Huns.
This is all I'm saying. So that 5 hour movie got great notices, standing of like a 10 minute standing ovation. Imagine standing up for 10 minutes and applauding after 5 hours of a movie.
Oh, that's the tedious. Like it, even if I genuinely believed it deserved it, I still wouldn't want to do it.
No. I'm not standing up
because I mean, just think about it. Like think about every. Any live event you've been to where there were applause and you had to participate in applause, it's always gone on too long. And in those cases, it's usually just a couple of minutes at most. Right. And by the end of 60 seconds, you're like, okay, can we wrap this up, everybody?
Do we really have to keep doing this? Yeah.
I think everybody gets it, that we appreciate what just happened and... Can we move on? I get to the car.
In a lot of scenarios at this point, like standing ovations have become obligatory, and I call bullshit on that. I don't like it.
Yeah.
I don't like that change. So despite, you know, that one got a great reception, but what is interesting to me is they also premiered Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny at Cannes. It is not gone well for them. Their current Rotten Tomato score is, I think, like 42% or something like that. And ouch. some of the reviews I read have been just eviscerating mean. Just like, this is garbage. Like everything that you thought was bad about Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, you were wrong. This is worse. Is a lot of
that makes me sad.
Yeah, it is a bummer, although entirely predictable, I would suggest.
Yeah, predictable, but I was rooting for it to be entertaining. Like I wasn't expecting it to be good, but I was just like, you know, it looks like, you know, at least, you know, setting wise and kind of MacGuffin wise, it was trying to reset to where the indie wheelhouse feels comfortable in kind of a more mythological supernatural area rather than sci-fi. You know, but also like, I mean, we've seen the footage. It's just so slathered in CGI post-processing.
It looks like
that. It doesn't look like an Indiana Jones movie because it doesn't look real enough.
It doesn't look like a movie, which was part of the problem with Crystal Skull, really.
Crystal Skull was the same thing, the same way. It was so heavily CGI'd that it didn't, like, part of the what made the original trilogy work so well was because it was, the whole series was an homage to the old serials where, you know, you would, back in the day there, you did insanely crazy, dangerous things that killed horses and, you know, put people in grave danger to, you know, get a shot. So, doing all the practical stunts that, you know, involved people that weren't tiny, like the people, like it was okay to go to like a visual effects shot in an 80s indie movie if like the person on screen looked like they were like 6 inches or smaller. Mm-hmm. you know, then they were like a model or Nazis animated falling off a cliff. And you're like, yeah, fuck you, Nazis. Fall off that cliff, you pieces of shit. just want to reiterate, I hate Nazis.
I think that's fair. I think it's an important thing to reiterate in this day and age, because a lot of people apparently do not.
Yeah, and that is a problem.
And a lot of other people get offended if you call other people Nazis, and that is offensive to me.
Yeah, you know who gets offended when you call Nazis Nazis?
Nazis.
Nazis, yeah. Mm-hmm. Pretty much. But like a lot of like the full frame human forms in indie movies were real people doing real stunts. And that's something that is like that. Yeah. Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, you know, at least half of that was not real. It was CGI enhanced.
Mm-hmm.
Animated.
Well, and
you know, it doesn't matter how well it's done. Like, you can tell, and you know it's not, like the visceralness of the indie movies were because the people getting tossed around, you could see them getting tossed around. And you could only toss around an actual human being so hard before, in reality, you actually hurt them. So that's skirting that line and doing a stunt to make it look like that. But when you get into something that's CGI, like, you know, Crystal Skull, you start tossing human forms around in a way that's slightly superhuman.
Mm-hmm.
And you notice that.
Yeah, and also...
You, whether you realize it or not, you notice it and you go, that's not a real person. That's really Indiana Jones. That's not really the person he punched.
I think in general with later Spielberg movies, and I included a lot in this because he started going digital a long time ago, as early as Saving Private Ryan. There was a lot of digital elements to that movie. But, I mean, and I know the new one is not directed by him, but Crystal Skull didn't look like a film. Like, the first three were shot on film, and even though there's you know, some very cartoony effects in the third one for sure. True. But some of it's more Harryhausen than, you know, blue screen or whatever they used in the late 80s. But they look like they were shot on film, because they were. So there, for me personally, there's an element of a movie that's almost entirely digital that feels like it removes me, at least by one layer, from getting that engaged with it. And that's probably because I'm old and I was brought up watching.
Well, I think it's a perception thing. It's like the film grain, you don't really put this kind of almost, you know, fourth wally barrier, unconscious barrier. And when it's gone, when it's like a pure digital and it's a much cleaner picture, you do have this, it strangely feels more artificial and less real, even though it's clearer and easier to see.
Yeah. 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 I don't know.
Which is a perception thing. But I think you're right. I think it's a perception thing. I think it's an age thing. I think, you know, younger generations growing up, they're growing up with cinema being purely digital and all being shot digital. And so they're used to that. So I don't think that's necessarily going to be something that is going to be as big an effect or a lasting effect, you know, with the younger generation. So what I'm saying is as soon as we die, then it won't be a problem.
Yeah, once we're dead, everything's going to be fine. But, I mean, at the same time, I mean, you're right. Because I, you know, the movies, watching my son key into certain things, you know, I, of course, as a parent, made him watch things that I loved when he was younger, which he likes, but they're not his go-to movies. I mean, one of his go-to movies is the original, you know, it's Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1, which I think is a delightful movie.
Yeah.
Volume 1's great. It's not about it being digitally or CGI. It's the story resonates. So in the end, maybe the problem with Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny is
It's more the story is just not resonating.
It just doesn't. And then also maybe, and this is the thing that nobody wants to talk about, maybe Harrison Ford is not resonated as Indiana Jones himself. I'll see the movie and, you know, weigh in on that later. But that there's a possibility because the whole thing is buoyed by Harrison Ford.
Well, and that's an interesting you know thing to think about because, you know, it's, you know, we've talked about, you know, the nostalgia of old people coming back to do roles or old people in action movies and stuff, and you know that's the question. It's like, you know, Indiana Jones is kind of the ultimate Raiders is the ultimate action movie, and you know it's the prototypical kind of, you know, gold standard for action movies. And so to, you know, have Harrison Ford come back now twice and not hitting the mark either time is something that's kind of interesting, especially when you contrast it with you know other similar kind of comebacks like the last season of Picard where all the next gen cast came back you know, over the course of 10 episodes, and it was a huge kind of success.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, crowd pleasing, fan pleasing, you know, and a, you know, kind of a huge big deal. And they did some really cool shit with it that was just a lot of fun and, you know, kind of hit that nostalgia lever while also kind of telling a, you know, doing a fun, you know, a fun show.
Delivering its own thing in addition to the thing.
It delivered its promise of bringing all the old people back to run around one last time.
But beyond that, what I'm saying is it delivered an entertaining show that was really encased in versus making it all about
Exactly.
And lucky for them, it resonated with fans because it doesn't always, like with that second Star Wars movie of the new trilogy or, you know, the fans.
Because it can go south, right?
Yeah. Away. It's a big risk to tell your own story, within a, you know, established IP. The final story, I just wanted you to weigh in on this. I thought it was so interesting. You know, Johnny Depp has this sort of comeback movie happening, which is a French film, and he received standing ovations, which I thought was really interesting. Where do you land on that, Skelton?
On standing ovations for
John? Yeah, I mean, you know, I know the Amber Heard thing is like weird and dicey. Depending on what country you're in, they side with one or the other legally.
Yeah, I mean,
but it seems to me on the face of it that Johnny Depp is not a good partner and is most likely terribly abusive on one level.
Yeah, he seems like kind of a douche. So
getting a standing ovation from a lot of Me Too activists is weird. I mean, it's just weird.
It's very weird.
It's weird that
it's extremely weird.
It's a hard thing to weigh in on, you know, because Amber Heard also seems like, you know, a problematic person. But it just seems weird to get insane about either side. But if you're going to get insane about one side versus the other, it seems especially crazy to get, you know, supportive of the male side of an abuse.
Yeah, but it's also, it's like, I mean, you know, you look at, you know, you got to look at Cannes and what they, I mean, they routinely support and give awards to like Polanski and, you know, other artists who are awful. So, you know, it's like, I guess my take on it is, I guess I'm not surprised.
Nah. But I mean, like the fact that you're not surprised and that Cannes is the thing that gets press every year, regardless, is also weird. I mean, the whole thing is weird. I mean, like,
yeah, no, it's, yeah, get... it's a whole, yeah, it's this whole,
we have this toxic subculture in the entertainment industry, or maybe it's just the culture. But the fact that it's been called out and litigated, and Harvey Weinstein's in jail, and then standing ovation for this potentially problematic person. I mean, I just, me personally, I'd be like, I don't even think I want to watch the movie. I don't want to get involved in this shit.
Yeah. I said, I certainly don't want to fucking give a standing ovation.
I'm Johnny not taking Depp. That stand on any level. I might not be, picketing on behalf of Amber Heard either, but I'm definitely not standing owing Johnny Depp. It's just weird. It's just weird. He hasn't redeemed himself to me personally. He's in the same.
Yeah, I'm not really. I don't like.
He's in the same camp as Mel Gibson.
I'm fine.
For me. I mean, he's.
Yeah, I'm fine with no more Johnny Depp. I don't need a redemption arc for him or for Mel Gibson or.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm fine. Yeah, I'm okay. Fine with the Pirates movies as they are. I don't need any more. It's fine. And if you want to make another one, you could do it without Johnny Depp. It's not that big a deal. He's barely in the last two movies anyway. He just shows up to do his like weird drunk thing in a few scenes. They're basically straight to video pirate movies, you know.
Yeah, and you can probably get AI to do that for you.
Anyway. Just put the AI. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of AI for, working class actors, but for Johnny Depp.
But to replace like a Johnny Depp or a Mel Gibson, yeah, let's do that.
If you really need to see those visages to make your movies happy, then let's.
The current state of AI is it tends to seem to really easily tip into being racist. Unprompted, so it seems perfect for.
Well, most of it is driven by use. Elon Musk, so that tracks. Fucking Christ. All right, that was fun. That was a fun bacon episode. Thanks for.
I don't think there's been a funner.
It's the funnerest.
It is the funnerest. We're the funnerists.
But we're changing our name to the funnerest. That's the new name of the show. It's the Funnerists.
Thanks for listening to the Funnerists.
Sorry, Stephen Fault is not here tonight. He's ill, and we wish him a speedy recovery from the sickness. And thanks to Adam Blau, as always, for the musicals. And
thank you. Adam.
Anything else you'd like to say, Skelton, before we wrap this up?
I think we really covered just about everything.
I think you're right. All right, bye. Next time on the film.
On the Funnerists.
I'm sorry. We'll see you next time on the Funnerists.